Murjovsky here. Better late than never. I know normally we bring you this podcast in the mornings on Friday, and being Friday afternoon now, after 3 o'clock, I realize I'm late. I was still in San Francisco. The city of street poop and liberals usually go well together. I'll tell you right now, it's absolutely horrid up there. If you have friends anywhere in the Bay Area, these fires, even if it didn't affect your immediate vicinity, the Paradise Fire and then also the Chico Fire, the Camp Fire that is still burning, I think maybe only 40-50% containment this morning. It's creating the worst air I have ever seen in my life. I've never been to China, so I picture this being something like China or another scenes of some post-apocalyptic disaster. You can't see from downtown. If you know San Francisco, you know, Market Street is the big street that runs to the Embarcadero, through the financial district, right downtown from Market Street. There's certain places where you can actually look, we'll say, toward the Golden Gate Bridge or off to the side. You can see normally. You can see Coit Tower, which is on a hill, probably closer to the Embarcadero than certainly to the Golden Gate Bridge. And it's you can't even see Coit Tower. People are, I would say, I was there three days. By the third day, pretty much about half the people out there that I saw were wearing inhalation masks of some kind. I wasn't there long enough to, and I didn't do very much walking outside. I was there for a conference, so I didn't get a mask. I was tempted. I should have. I think I feel awful. So if my voice begins to fade, know that I was poisoned up north. And a couple of observations about this. One, I think it must have killed all those San Francisco people who, I don't think they touch inorganic smoothies, right? I mean, everything has to be organic. Every egg, has been individually laid, by a chicken that enjoys, 1.1 acres of free roaming space. That is fed organic corn and grain and whatnot. So it must just kill them to be in this type of pollution. One. Two, there are still people smoking on the street. Yeah, but there, you know, you'd be there walking, suffocating, and all of a sudden guys, you know, marching up toward you, puffing on a cigarette. I was with an attorney, and he said, "Well, at least they're inhaling the air through a filter, so maybe they have one up on us. I don't know. Anyway, so it's terrible up there. The fires are raging. It's brutal. I think by now, those of us here in the Southland know of people who've lost everything in the Malibu fire. It's just a terrible couple weeks in the state." And our hearts and thoughts go out to those affected. We hope that we get some peace in all of this soon. Now, I don't know if we can say anymore that the show is coming to you from behind the orange curtain. Because since last week's show, it now seems to be the case that we've lost every single Republican office, well, certainly congressional office, in Orange County. This is a first in my lifetime. If you know the bat, right, it's a joke about the Iron Curtain, and that we were behind it. You know, we were safely here behind it, but we were the last stand here in Orange County. A bastion of conservatism. The rest of the state was insane, right? We were still the reasonable ones here. Well, that is no longer the case, friends. it's gone. Now, why? Is it Trump? Is it just the time? Is people are people they're changing hearts and minds? It's complicated. I've done a lot of thinking about this, and I also think finally there's some interesting opinions out there about this that I think some of which are starting to get at the truth. You got to remember one thing, and that is that we probably all know at least one person. You know at least one person who has left the state for ideological reasons. So I got, for example, I've got this friend. His name is Brant. I grew up with him, went to my elementary school, went to high school together. He's a normal guy, a Republican guy, likes guns, likes to keep, you know, most of the money that he makes, doesn't enjoy paying for, bazillions of dollars worth of welfare money for illegal immigrants. So anyway, so what does he do? He says, enough is enough. I'm moving to Texas. And he did this, I think, a couple years ago. Now, I know other people like Brant, and I think you do, too. And I'm not even talking about the people that get moved as part of a job relocation. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying people who have self-selected their own removal from the state. And they're out there and they're adding up and there's math to support it. Because the net reduction in the number of registered Republicans leaving the state, reducing registered Republicans on the voting rolls, is shocking. We're down something to the tune of 1 million registered Republicans in the state. It's a big number. And it could probably be even, possibly be even higher. And so the reality, you're seeing it happen here in California. You're seeing people that just, there's no chance of winning. So we are here. We are now, California is more than ever a single party state, single party rule. Which is interesting because I don't understand what exactly Democrats are going to run off of. Who's going to be their boogeyman? They can't run against the Republicans anymore. In the state legislature, what are they going to say? They've got a supermajority. So it's not like the Republicans have any say in anything that happens. But I'm blown away. I'm blown away that voters still don't hold these clowns accountable for anything. I mean, Governor Brown, they are so worried about endangered squirrels and gnats and bats and slugs. They don't go out there and clear out forests and brush areas because, you know, it's an environmental problem. You can't do it. Habitat renewal. Another BS. These wildfires occurring in areas that where brush should have been cleared. And these municipalities, counties in the state have not done it. They don't do it. In my neighborhood where I live, it's, you know, again, it's privately owned, so they're able to do this. They go in and they bulldoze every year. They bulldoze large swaths of land to protect homes. Now, I shouldn't even be saying this. Maybe we're violating some state law. So I'm not going to tell you where I live. But suffice it to say, yeah, there's some upheaval and there's probably some spotted gnat somewhere that that has its home turned upside down by a caterpillar, bulldozer, earth mover, whatever they are. But I think the Orange County Fire Authority and whatever contractors they have up there doing it is this is what you do. Because losing 600 homes in Malibu is not good. I mean, it is good if, you know, you're got a lot of money in Home Depot stock. So this, you know, and it's just one of the things, water. We're constantly worried about water. We've not upgraded any of our infrastructure here for years. Democrats are in charge. They do nothing about water. The only thing they care about is illegals, welfare, the homeless. You know, and every person that possibly has some defect that they need to turn into a saint and idolize and put in their proper hierarchy on the victimhood scale. So I don't know what it's going to take here in California. It's been a rough week and I'm pissed. But I want to tell you, friends, I am not abandoning my post. And I'm not going to let California go to the loons here. And I think there's okay, when you take out the demographics, you take out the people that have left, that have self-selected themselves out of the state, who have removed themselves from the rolls. Let's take the math and put it over here off to the side. The other part here that's really important to think about is the Republican Party in California is lost. And the candidates aren't good. And they've got to have some, there's got to be some renewal, and there's got to be some message that actually connects with voters. And the result may very well be here that first, in order for the Republican Party to get its act and find its voice and find its new heading, they need to first be all but eradicated. You got to pardon the metaphor here, but they got to get burned to the ground in order for something new to rise from the ashes. So the Republican Party that you and I grew up with, the Republican Party that you've known hitherto as an institution in California, I think is done. And I know I generally don't get too much into state topics, and but I think that this anti-Republican, pro-Democrat movement in the state is translating into congressional wins, which has less to do with the Trump protest vote and more to do with just the changing demographics and ideas that are occurring here that are not necessarily nationalized, done on a national in a national context. The other thing is just money. I mean, the money is a huge part of this. I mean, you look at the 48th district. You know, that was a $33 million race. That's Rohrabacher lost his seat to Harley Ruda. $33 million. And much of that cash was on the Democratic side. It was 5-1 Democrat money. And where was it coming from? It's coming from, you know, big donors. Tom Steyer, Bloomberg, and others. You remember when Democrats were all up in arms about Citizens United? Pshaw, you know, this quote unquote dark money has been weaponized here in California in a very major way. Now, the $75 million plus that went into saving Beto O'Rourke in Texas didn't work because Texas still, gosh forbid, still has some reasonable people there. But here in California, it's a different deal. And I think it's going to need a new crop of candidates. And it can't be your fuddy-duddy, you know, come along and, you know, here's a social conservative and we're going to stand up for our family values. People have their family values or they don't. Your family values are your own damn business. It's for you to figure out between you, your wife, your husband, your three wives, your squirrel that you married. I don't freaking care. What matters is, to me, the rule of law, doing right in the community, not spending money we don't have, and creating a climate here that is welcoming to business instead of screwing business and making it, you know, flee the state faster than we can say, hello, my name's Jerry Brown. The Republican Party just needs to get back to the basics. And in this sense, the Republican Party needs to take a page out of the Trump manual because Trump's talking points are so simple. They're basic. And it was always focused on economy as a headline issue, on rule of law as a headline issue, and principles that most Americans do fundamentally agree on. Now, the California Democrats, I'm telling you, and this is true, by the way, for national Democrats, they are going to screw the pooch. This is a technical term of art. They are going to screw this up because Ocasio-Cortez, Nancy Pelosi, and that whole cabal of loons won't be able to help themselves from doing awful things. The same is true in California. You think that, you know, Gavin Newsom is suddenly going to be a middle of the roader. He thinks he's gotten a mandate from God. The worst part of all of this is Democrats believe that their version of economics, which, by the way, if they were in charge of, you know, the law of physics, everything that you if you poured a cup of coffee, you'd end up on the ceiling in the, you know, in the, every morning. That is, in physics, the equivalent of economics under what the Democratic Party believes. The more you tax, the more you take out of the economy and allocate to help your pet projects, the better off everyone's going to be. Wrong. It doesn't work. And in the end, America certainly, it won't happen because 2 years with Nancy Pelosi in charge and she's going to be out of there. But California, with this continuing, you know, step-by-step, lockstep into lunacy with Gavin Newsom and all these goofballs that are in Sacramento. Yeah, I'm telling you, the net result will be we will become an extremely impoverished state, a place where you have a handful of billionaires, some millionaires, and then a whole bunch of poor, broke people. And make no mistake about it, the dirty secret of the Democratic Party in the state of California is that that is exactly how they want it. Because if you're not broke, if you're not down and out, if you're not struggling, you don't need them. And they want you to need them. I promise you this is true. Sam Rojofsky, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is a solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Let me tell you, if there is one fight to watch, I don't know, maybe you're a, you know, like mixed MMA fighting or, you know, you like the WWE, whatever it is. If there is a fight to watch in politics, it's not Trump v. Mueller. I don't think that's it right now. Where the action is about to heat up is the incoming freshman class of young. Well, we'll say some of them are young, but new Democrats that are coming to Capitol Hill versus the she-devil Nancy Pelosi. Now, Nancy thinks she's going to become speaker. And I'm putting away my crystal ball here. I'm not going to make any predictions about this. But I will tell you, I'm going to explain to you why it's not a given thing. You've got to know this. Because she's saying it's a given thing. Here's Nancy, just so you understand, because she's publicly saying, I'm going to be Speaker of the House. And I secretly, you know, between you and me, I really, really, really want them to pick Nancy Pelosi. Like, I really want Nancy Pelosi. All right, so that, we're not going to tell them that, but that is what I want, and I think you want it too. Anyway, Nancy wants it badly. And here is what she was telling a reporter yesterday, Thursday, at a press conference when she was being asked, and how dare this guy asked about some 17 members who do not potentially want her to become speaker. Listen closely.
There are at least 17 members who have signed a letter saying they will not support you on the floor.
Have you seen the letter?
I've not seen it.
You haven't seen it. Okay. You haven't seen it. Okay.
There are more, apparently, who are willing to vote no. You've expressed total confidence.
I do. I intend to win the speakership with Democratic votes, if that was your question. I have overwhelming support in my caucus to be Speaker of the House.
Now, the way I understand this, and I was just having a conversation with someone who may be a part of this process— And the way I understand it is you get if to be Speaker of the House, it's the party leader of the party that's in power. And so you get voted in first by the caucus, and then there is generally what is largely a procedural vote in the whole House chamber. Now, I say I'm telling you this is where it potentially can run aground. And the reason for that is that Pelosi has got to first get support, a majority support within her chamber, within her caucus, within all the Democrats that are there. Now, think about this. All these little swing districts, right? All these races where they're, you know, where the press is crowing about how a red district was turned blue. In majority of these districts, when I was following these races, these Democrats were running explicitly on the promise that they would not support Nancy Pelosi for speaker. And this is, well, yeah, of course, politicians break promises. It may happen, but you've got to remember it is absolutely not a for certain deal that that these newcomers are going to support her. And now this is why it's important. She may have enough votes in the caucus, right? She may have a majority of Democrats supporting her bid for speakership. But what happens a floor vote? So the Democrats right now, what they hold the chamber, we still don't know. There's so many races in flux, but let's say it's a plus 30 or plus 35 being the number of seats that they have as an advantage over Republicans. Well, what if all the newbies, right, that constitute the shift, the power shift, what if all the newbies stick together and don't want her? They can't vote for her because otherwise in 2 years, you know, hey, you broke cardinal promise. You broke one of the most important covenants you made during your election. You're out of there, guy. So I don't know. Ocasio-Cortez specifically ran on, I'm not going to support Pelosi. I think we need a change of leadership. And that's why a Pelosi ally in the primary lost to Ocasio-Cortez. Because Democrats in her district didn't want Nancy Pelosi anymore. So I'm going to tell you right now, if Ocasio-Cortez turns around and supports Pelosi, she's toast. Her vanquished opponent from the primary will come back, and in a heavily Democratic district, he will win because they will all be disappointed with her. So Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, unfortunately for us, unfortunately for Sam Nation, may not necessarily be a shoo-in for speakership. All right, don't go anywhere. More on the election, all these dubious vote counts and the like. I will break it all down for you here after the break. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, yes, I'm going to get to the Avenatti thing. I know. Don't worry. I first need to do a Brenda Snipes update. You know, Brenda Snipes is the Yoda-like character who's running the Broward City election board. Ms. Snipes, why say Yoda? You know, it's a slam on her physical appearance. I'm just going to put it that way. There's some balding. Okay. There's some balding. She's got some hair loss going on and her dome looks a little bit like Yoda from Star Wars, but it's what's in her head that has me more bothered. Frankly, this woman is an idiot. And what I love right now is I love all the Democrats out there carrying water for her. For example, Andrea Mitchell from MSNBC on Tuesday, talking up how Brenda Snipes is a Republican, right? This is the new talking point. Brenda Snipes is a Republican, so there is no way that she could possibly be tipping the scales for Democratic candidates. And this specifically dealing with the race for governor, okay, Rick DeSantis versus Gillum, and then also for the Senate, the U.S. Senate for the state of Florida. And this is Rick Scott, who has a lead over incumbent Democrat Bill Nelson. So this is Ms. Mitchell, intrepid reporter, talking about how Broward County Election Supervisor Brenda Snipes is actually a Republican.
And we should also point out that Brenda Snipes in Broward County is a Republican appointed by former governor, then Governor Jeb Bush. So she was put in by a Republican governor after the mess that we all remember from 2000. And she's hardly a Democratic official or someone doing the bidding of the Democratic candidates there.
My God, this is what you get when you watch MSNBC. Well, you think Yoda Snipes isn't well, let's listen to what she has to say about it, huh?
Well, I was talking with a woman today as she came into our office, and she made some statement about a partisan statement. And she said, I know that you're a Republican. I said, I have been a Democrat all my life. In this position, I have been very focused on party.
This is what I'm telling you. It's not what's between her pointy ears that really could get any kind of compliment. She's a moron. I mean, she's basically admitting right there on Chris Cuomo, I'm a Democrat, and in this position, I have been very focused on party. Hey, lady, in the position as being an independent elections supervisor, I don't think being focused on party is what you ought to be doing. I've been a Democrat all my life. I've been very focused on party. So there is no hope or prayer for Gillum or for Nelson to pull this through. I don't think so. The vote counts are big, but now they have a very high margin of votes that they will consider for an automatic recount. So most states that are run better than Florida, you need something like 0.15%. I mean, it's a very small margin in order to trigger a recount. And you don't get a recount if you're anything over that, something like a quarter of a percentage point. The margins are a lot higher in Florida for automatic recounts. And as best as I can tell, it's a means by which to swing elections and to mess with election results. Because the minute that you've got people in there counting and stuffing ballots, right? We had trucks showing up at midnight with a bunch of unsigned provisional ballots. Provisional ballots being these ballots that people show up at the polling place and say, hi, I'm here to vote. And they say, no, you're not, because, you know, you're nowhere on our list. You say, but I'm a voter. I'm voting, damn it. Okay. Whoa, okay. Well, ma'am, here's a provisional ballot. So they got busloads of illegals, busloads of people who aren't qualified to vote at all. And they're all showing up there, you know, with these provisional ballots. And then you've got these election officials, you know, quietly signing them. Oh, let's see. Oh, it's a vote for Bill Nelson, Democrat. We're going to make this one work out. So this one, I don't care. And by the way, Jeb Bush shouldn't be trusted to appoint a dog catcher. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you who thought Jeb was going to be a good nominee for president, you ought to get your heads examined, okay? Brenda Snipes. All right, we'll get to Avenatti. Also, don't worry, I will break down the Acosta thing. It's very confusing. It's confusing because what actually did that judge decide today? Kind of depends. The answer depends, right, if you're watching CNN or if you're watching I don't know, some hosts on Fox. You get, but there's their way, there's Fox's way, and then there's a true way. I'll get to that. Sam Rojofsky, don't go anywhere.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Insufferable crying Chuck Schumer. Have been listening to his sorry face, watching his sorry face on TV all week. What's he out there saying about Florida? We need to count every vote. And it's funny because it's an interesting demagoguery. Of course we need to count every legitimate vote. But whenever you hear, let me tell you, whenever you hear a Democrat talking about how they need to count every vote, well, that's when you know that they've got a ditto machine, right? They don't even have like a, you know, like a Canon or a laser printer or anything. They got one of those like Ditto machines back there, and they're hand cranking out ballots for their guy. That's Democratic parlance for count every vote. We really, when we revamp the website, Robbie, we need to put in a Sam Nation glossary. Because I think it's helpful to people to understand what a Democrat... See, Democrats don't always speak English. They use words like bipartisanship, right? Bipartisanship. But bipartisanship just means that Republicans take it in the A money money and do whatever Democrats, you know, say to them to do. Well, the same is with this count every vote. So, Schumer this Tuesday is talking about the Senate race. And this, these are the words straight from the horse's mouth.
Fortunately, with the Senate race, there is no Electoral College. That means supervisors of the elections should have all the time they need to count every Floridian's ballot to make sure the candidate with the most votes is actually seated in January, even if the vote count has to go beyond Sunday.
Yeah, so Yoda Rumpelstiltskin Brenda Snipes needs to have all the time she needs to go and fabricate some votes. Now, when we had the Allen Webb contest, when Jim Webb in Virginia was trailing by 7,000 votes. Anyway, so you remember that race, the special election? Right. So here was Chuck Schumer, and this wasn't even that long ago. In 2006, this is what Schumer said.
I am urging, with all due respect, the president today to urge Mr. Allen to forego this futile recount and contestation policy, which will simply delay the inevitable. There is not a better way for the president to show his desire to work in a bipartisan way than to make sure that none of these dilatory kinds of obfuscations go forward, because they're not going to accomplish anything at all.
And I'm sorry, I misspoke. It was George Allen who was trailing the Democrat. It was the Republican trailing the Democrat by 7,000 votes, which is, by the way, a far smaller margin than what we have here in Florida. And at the time, Mr. Schumer, a Senate minority leader, was out there saying, well, that's dilatory obfuscation. I don't know if that's a sex position. Dilatory obfuscation. We're going to have to get... We're putting it in the glossary. Thank you, producer Robbie. I'm just trying to point out to you how transparently political Schumer is. If you didn't know this already. And I love it when Schumer gets up and says that Trump is lying. This president is lying. This is political opportunism. And I'm looking at Schumer, and I've come of age politically in this world with Schumer in positions of power in the Senate and the House. So he's, you know, no stranger to me here. And I love it. This guy is a consummate politician, a total liar, and it's very transparent. So whatever you do, be safe out there and don't engage in any kind of dilatory obfuscation. Okay. Yes, Acosta, we got to get into Avenatti. I'll get into that too. Don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Murjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Track tracking the election results, looking at Utah's 4th congressional district, where it looks like Ben McAdams, the Democrat, now for the first time since the election has fallen behind Mia Love. Mia Love is now ahead by 400 so votes. I don't remember elections. I don't know. I guess perhaps we forget about it as we move on from them. But I just don't remember so many being undecided this late after polls close. What are we now? 10 days? 10 days, a little longer past Election Day. And we're still not sure about some of these races. It creates some awkward circumstances because I know, for example, imagine this. The election's held on Tuesday. And they want you out there as a freshman congressman. They want you out there in D.C. the following Tuesday for orientation. Now, part of this is, for example, the caucus Democrats, they want to get these guys on their side. So there's a little bit of whining and dining. And I imagine some politicking to get Nancy her speakership. So there's things like that going on. But it isn't a little awkward if you got to show up for orientation. And then you find out, 2 weeks later that you've lost the race. You've gone out on your own dime. You've left, you left your work after a busy campaign for, time away from home that you don't have at this point. And it's awkward, right? Who wants to show up at orientation for a job they didn't get? Like nobody, I know. This actually reminds me of how I muscled my way into my law school. Have I shared the story with you? Well, it's Friday. Like, you want to hear it? Okay, it's pretty funny. So I didn't get accepted into my law school. Chapman originally said no to me. And it's actually a little more perverse than that. They had a terrible, and I'm just going to say this. This woman was a cow. The lady that they had in charge of admissions. And she was just an absolute nincompoop, like the just incompetent boob. And this woman, they put me on a wait list. And the year I applied to law school, just a little bit of history. We're going to go just a few. Don't get panicked in there. Dr. Audio, do not panic. I'm going a little long and we're just borrowing time from the next hour. It's my show and I can do this. So anyway, when I applied to law school, everyone was applying to law school. And do you know why? Because it was right when the economy went bust. And so a lot of young people who were working, maybe had a year and they were working at Lehman Brothers or they were working at some bank and in the financial sector. And suddenly what happened? Their jobs were the first to go, right? And who hires a kid or an intern or somebody who's just starting out? Nobody, right? Those are the jobs that disappeared overnight. And so all these, what do millennials do when they suddenly find themselves out of work? I know, I'm going to sign up for a student loan. I'm going to live off the largesse of the government and go and apply to law school. And in fairness, as soon as you have a lot of these people are very qualified and did well in their LSAT scores and had good GPA results from when they were an undergrad. So these all of a sudden law schools just had an embarrassment of riches in terms of the number of applications they were getting. And Chapman was, my school was no different. And it just was the worst time for a guy like me who had been planning methodically to go to law school. I was planning to go as an adult. I was in the industry. I knew what I wanted to do. I already had my job. I had everything planned out. So suddenly I'm competing with all these people that were looking basically to go on fancy welfare. Well, at any rate, so I end up waitlisted at Chapman, which is kind of like saying, look, we'll get back to you. Let's see how it shakes out. We don't know who's going to say yes to us. So it's like flying standby. And I'm a guy who pushes, right? This is what I do. I push. So I would call from time to time and talk to the dean of admissions. And I'd say, hey, how's it looking? I'm just checking in, whatever. And finally, this woman who ran the admissions office says to me, okay, you know what? Do this for me. Write me an email and tell me why you should be admitted. And I thought, well, this is great. You know, I'm going to, you know, so I wrote an email and I still have it somewhere. It was good. And do you know what things I emphasized? I emphasized all the commercially viable things that I'd done in my life. I'm a self-made person. You know, I started this business. I've got, you know, I'm going to be an asset to your school, not just there as a student, but later on, et cetera, et cetera. And I get a response back. You are hereby rejected. And it wasn't really until that point that I looked her up and she just is this affirmative action loser, right? That's who she is. The only reason she's in the school is because she's black. I mean, I hate to say this. She's black. She's got this history of being, you know, devoted to radical causes and to nonsense. She went to law school up at a terrible law school up in the Bay Area. Look, she's terrible, but she's there to promote what? Diversity and things like that. Way more important to her than any kind of substance. And she didn't like me because I was a rich white guy. I mean, that's really what it came down to. So, at any rate, I got to work. And I won't get into all the details of it, but I got myself admitted into Chapman Law. And had a great time there and loved the school. And this lady, let's just say I outlasted her. She's been gone for a number of years. And I wish her well in all of her endeavors. I could talk for hours about law schools and their deans of admission. These people, generally speaking, are bozos. All right. There it is. Yeah. So I remember showing up at orientation and sort of being not fully admitted. And she was there. Oh, I'd already gotten my admittance letter, but she was so passive aggressive that she didn't give me a name tag. I mean, she really wanted to rub in that I did not belong there. Doesn't matter. It all worked out in the end. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation. I'm getting into the Avenatti thing. Acosta, all about it up next. Don't go anywhere.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, coming to you loud and clear from an undisclosed location deep behind the socialist curtain, the Democratic People's Republic of California, and its newest, freshest ally, the, Soviet Union of Orange County. It is disheartening, but the fight is far from over. I predict some of these congressional districts will get one back. I do. And I think it's because there will be a crop of Republican candidates that come in that are far more appealing than what we had. So getting kicked in the teeth isn't always the worst thing. You know, you do come back oftentimes stronger with a far more improved message. Now, the Acosta brouhaha has everybody giving their 10 cents about this, and there's legal analysis here that isn't being done. Everybody is talking about this as a First Amendment issue. Now, it's not. The judge today granted a temporary injunction, basically a restraining order, a TRO, temporary restraining order, that enjoins the White House from preventing Acosta access to his press credentials and from entering the White House to serve in his function as correspondent for CNN. But he didn't decide it on the First Amendment. He did not touch the First Amendment issue. He decided on the basis of the Fifth Amendment, and this is a due process argument. Whenever you hear that phrase all the time, right? Due process. So let me just a little bit of peek behind the curtain of what this means. Due process is something that the Fifth Amendment entitles all of us to. If the government, not Facebook, okay, but if the government acting in its capacity is depriving you of a benefit or of something you own or of a right, you're afforded due process. Most commonly, we're familiar with this. You know, we watch Perry Mason on TV or Matlock or whatever procedural drama, court drama of your choice that you may watch. You know that every person who is accused of a crime deserves due process, and that means they get a jury trial, and there's certain procedures and protocols that the prosecution has to go through in order to put them in jail. But it's also true for other things. And in this particular case, it has to do with these press credentials. The government, right? The executive branch of the federal government, aka the White House, took away these press credentials. And the real issue here is that there are some established rules that the Trump people didn't follow. There are some established rules. There's precedent and protocol for what you do when you're removing the press credentials from a White House correspondent or stripping them of their credentials. And the judge basically said you didn't follow the rules. And so it's a Fifth Amendment violation. Now, it's actually not exactly what was decided here, because when you're doing a TRO and you're getting a restraining order, this is why the Avenatti story is going to dovetail nicely into the Acosta one. But when you're getting in a restraining order, it's the lowest standard of proof required. The judge isn't actually making a decision on the merits of your case. The judge is making a decision whether or not you're likely to prevail. So basically, are you going to win if you actually go to full trial on this? One. And two, is there going to be a substantial harm if this, if you're basically, if whatever, you know, is causing you a pain or trouble, like here Acosta losing his press credentials, if it's going to cause you to be inconvenienced or substantial harm to occur. Now, so what they decided here is just that, hey, probably going to prevail on Fifth Amendment on due process grounds. And yeah, it's going to be a bit of an inconvenience to Acosta as a White House correspondent. That's it. Is there a First Amendment claim? No. I mean, I don't see it. I don't get it. What is the First Amendment? Everybody talks about their First Amendment rights. I don't think anybody knows what it means. It means the government can't interfere with your free speech rights. So, and that, by the way, is subject to some limitations. For example, you're allowed to burn the flag, but if you're burning the flag, you know, in Malibu Canyon 4 weeks ago, the government can come down and say, no, you can't do that because it's going to cause harm. And I don't care if your objective is speech, but your speech is likely to cause harm. And so we can ban you from doing it. Also, time, place, and manner. You can hold a rally, but you need to get a permit. And you can hold a rally in with the microphone, but you can't do it late at night if you're going to be waking the neighbors. Things like that. Here, what are we talking about? We're talking about one reporter getting banned from the White House for whatever reason. He's not being banned from speaking his mind about President Trump. He's not being told you can't report negative news. He's just saying you can't be in the building. It actually has nothing to do with speech whatsoever. I heard an argument Acosta was making. What were you? They basically think that I could do my job. I can report on the president by watching the president on TV. And my answer to that legal answer is, yeah, you can. Your speech is not affected based on your physical location in the White House or out of the White House. So this is really, you know, don't let anybody tell you that this is a First Amendment case. some loony left-wing district court federal judge is going to make this a First Amendment issue. And the only reason that the that CNN and its filings put First Amendment, this is what lawyers do. They throw everything up on the wall. But I don't think it's a strong argument. Their strongest argument is due process. And all that Trump has to do now, and I think they're going to do it, if I had a crystal ball, what they're going to do is they're going to say, okay, you're right, our bad, we didn't follow the rules. Now, starting Monday, here's how we're going to do it. Acosta, we are going to be taking your credentials. What say ye? And Acosta's like, you can't take it, you can. There has to be a little hearing, and they're going to make a decision, and they're going to listen to his side of it, and then they're going to ban him. They're going to take away his press credentials again. I think that's probably what they're going to do. Now, is this fight really worth it? Probably not. Now we're moving away from the legal argument here. But there, you know, this case, it's interesting. But the White House, Obama, Clinton, Trump, Bush, you don't have a right to be inside of the White House. Hell, you and I are Americans. We pay for the building and tax. We do not have a right to be inside of the White House. And when you're given a license, which is really what it is, a ticket into the White House, under certain protocols and procedures, there has to be a way that the White House is able to take that away from you. And I think my final point on this, too, is I don't understand. The holder of the pass is not Acosta. I mean, yeah, it's his face on it, but they give the pass to CNN, the company, right? So, and presumably, right, the White House hasn't banned CNN from the White House. They've just said Jim Acosta's a rude guy, and we don't want him there. Send another reporter. And CNN, I know they've got a whole pool. They've got a whole staff of. I mean, really, can't they find another Latino guy, or maybe a transgender something or other? It would be way better. Acosta's too square. He's too, I don't know. He's too establishment. He's got Latino privilege. But if they maybe could get a one-legged trans black person, Rachel Dolezal, I don't know where she is. I don't know if she's a monoped. But anyway, look, this CNN ought to have just substituted somebody in. But they didn't because they wanted to make a big brouhaha about this. And they're playing it right. If I have an opinion on this, the CNN is doing it exactly right. They're grandstanding over this, and they're doing it, and they're doing it successfully. And this is unfortunately the downside to picking a fight on this. So, Trump, the ideal thing is they just let the whole thing go, and don't pass the mic to Acosta, right? That's another thing. Don't call on the guy. You know he doesn't care about asking tough questions. He wants airtime. He's not asking questions. He's giving his opinion. The press conference is Trump's place to give an opinion. So when Acosta's grandstanding and they know he's going to grandstand, don't give the mic to him. I don't know. This is kind of the sum of the whole story. All right. What I'm going to do. Yeah, I'm going to. No, I know. I promised you. Avenatti, there's a big picture here with Avenatti that you've got to understand. And I don't think anybody's talking about it. They're not, because he's become a caricature of himself. I will explain exactly what I mean when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski. Majowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Okay, let me tell you, look, Avenatti, before he was a media darling, he was just another PI lawyer, okay? And I, being a personal injury attorney by day myself, I have a little bit of insight into this. So I have to be very careful how I talk about this. Although, well, let me just say this. Suppose for a minute that your personal life was going into the toilet. We've all been there at various times in our life, right? You know, I don't care. You've been married happily for 30 years. There have been times where things are not good. And what I understand about Mr. Avenatti is leading up to this big splash of representing Stormy Daniels and becoming the number one Trump critic out there and 88 appearances on CNN, blah, 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 blah. Before all that was happening, him and his wife were kind of on the rocks. The other impression I have, and this is not just from the media, but from being in this community, he has an office in Newport Beach. Well, had an office. He got evicted today officially. The sheriff showed up and booted him. But he has an office in the same city that James and I do. James and I own our building. Avenatti is a renter at the Irvine Company. James and I, we pay our bills. Mr. Avenatti does not. But so the impression I have, got a guy whose marriage is on the rocks. His finances, I've read in the newspaper, two private jets, you know, crazy lifestyle. I always see him in a nice suit. He lives a good life. He did that investment in the coffee company. It went south. So a lot of things are sort of spinning out of control. Now, there's one thing you've got to understand. Good lawyers, smart lawyers, and I count him as a smart lawyer. And I, from what I hear, I've never interacted with him. But what I hear, he's a hell of a good attorney and was at a time a top trial lawyer. When they're cornered, when you're, I don't know, when you're facing all sorts of obstacles, double down and go big. That's what they do. And everything about Avenatti, you've got to look through that lens. Whether you like him or hate him, understand that he's a cornered animal who is doubling down and breathing fire in an effort to go big or go bust. He may go bust. And this incident, we don't know exactly what happened. And like everybody else, like Justice Kavanaugh, he is entitled to the presumption of innocence. Right? But, you know, there's a woman somewhere whose face was beaten who claims that Avenatti did it. There was enough evidence at the scene to prompt an arrest. The woman was not his wife. I think those are the facts as we know it. Everything else is, I don't know, nothing. Fluff. What comes out of his mouth is fluff. What conservatives are crowing about on Twitter is fluff. It doesn't matter. But why did it happen? It happened because the guy's life is spinning out of control. And the public persona has now run in direct conflict with the private one. That's what this is all about. And it happens, I'm telling you, I know lawyers out there who run hot and heavy. And they will, and occasionally, right, there's just that moment, that split second where things sort of start to spiral out of control. If he were a Trump guy, if he were a conservative, if he were anyone not on the left, this would be career ending. But for Democrats, we know beating up women, raping women, sexually assaulting women generally is absolutely okay. As long as and I want to make sure we put this in context. As long as you have a long history of supporting women's rights and respecting women, your private personal conduct never seems to matter. And that is what the narrative will be here. And I have an exact proof of this. When we come back, a clip I will play for you. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation. Booyah.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation. Yeah, I'm pointing out the personal, the private life versus the public persona of Avenatti to let everybody know that I think my analysis of him is he's a paper tiger that's going to flame out. So don't, everybody's like, this is it. This is the end of his political aspirations. Let me tell you, you put this guy under slightly closer scrutiny, he's going to have way bigger problems than smacking a woman around. Not that that isn't a bad deal, but I'm telling you, you start to peel away layers on this guy and there's going to be a lot of stink. Now, here is Avenatti talking about the allegations against him. This is after his arrest on Wednesday. Now, look, I'm telling you, you already hear the smug answer here to these accusations and why there's no way he could possibly be guilty of these things.
I have never struck a woman. I never will strike a woman. I have been an advocate for women's rights my entire career, and I'm going to continue to be an advocate. I am not going to be intimidated from stopping what I am doing. I am a father to two beautiful, smart daughters. I would never disrespect them by touching a woman inappropriately or striking a woman.
You know, that's it. I would never strike a woman because I've got two beautiful daughters that I love deeply, and I've been an advocate for women's rights my entire career. Okay. So what about, the hundreds of gay closeted Republicans that are out there, pushing anti-gay ordinances their entire professional careers? Meanwhile, they're going to clubs at night, hooking up with young men. I mean, it is similar. It's the same thing. There's no possible way I could be gay. I've been fighting gay rights my entire career. Okay. What's that in your pocket? Just kidding. Anyway, it's absurd, right? But this is the line that you hear over and over again. And in the early stages of accusations against him, exactly what Harvey Weinstein was saying, wasn't he? I have been fighting for women and women's rights, and I am just the women could not have a greater champion than myself. And by the way, as to atone for this, I'm going to make an anti-Trump film. That was Weinstein. I think that he's saying these things because time and time again, liberals, Democrats have said these things and people have listened to them and believed it. And the press will give him a pass that they didn't give Kavanaugh, that they didn't give Trump, that they haven't given people on the right. And it's wrong. I hope that Avenatti is given the presumption of innocence. I hope that if these charges are BS, that he's able to get them kicked out. Also, I hope that if he beat the crap out of a woman, that he goes to jail. So that's really the situation. But as far as a career, I mean, I want him. I love the fact that he is still out there. Because if you think that Avenatti has any shame, think again. You know, can you imagine if I were, if I had debts in the millions of dollars and I was getting evicted by the Irvine Company from my office, you would, and do you think I could sit up there and shout at Trump that he's a, you know, that he's not really a billionaire and that he's a fraud and that he's this and that and the other? I couldn't let those words escape my mouth. I would be so embarrassed. So I love the fact that Avenatti's doubling down on all of this, but it fits a pattern of his behavior leading up to this moment. And so expect more of the same. And I think the more that it occurs, the more he becomes discredited. The more he becomes discredited, the more of a quandary CNN and other of his enablers on the left are going to be in, right? Because they've promoted it, they've created it, they've fed it. And now they are realizing that they're up, you know, what's creek. And the only paddle they have is a guy who likes to paddle women. Okay, Sam Rejofsky back with a really great gem here about Michael. Oh, this is straight from Michael Avenatti's mouth. This is a great exchange from The View from the summer. You'll love this. Sam Rejofsky back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rejofsky, okay. Michael Avenatti, this is the last I'm going to do here. This is so good. I really, you know, we have to explore the possibility that this really was just a consensual act that went wrong. You know, because, you know, you can consent to a battery in the context of certain activities. I'm not familiar necessarily with these types of activities firsthand, but here is Michael Avenatti in his own words talking about sex. And he's on The View, and he's talking to Joy Behar, and you have McCain jumping in here. So just listen to this.
To be clear, unlike Ted Cruz and Tucker Carlson, I actually believe in sex.
they don't. Yeah.
So you know, of course, I have sexual fantasies, sex. But
he has
all
five
of mine,
kids. He definitely believes in sex. Tucker Carlson has a bunch of children.
But
I don't know what that.
But
means.
All of my sexual fantasies involve handcuffs.
Oh. Well, if you ask the LAPD, maybe he was just fulfilling one of those fantasies. This is a great find. I love it. We will follow this story for you. All the angles. That I promise you. All right. Now, remember when I was talking about Nancy Pelosi? She's not a shoo-in, right? You heard her talking about how she definitely wants to be speaker. But here is a House Representative, Jan Schakowsky, talking about this element of people that might be opposed to her. Listen to this.
We're talking about a very small rump group within the caucus that is saying that they will deprive Nancy Pelosi of being the speaker, a position she so well deserves and has done so well, and have really not a candidate to replace her. So it's a creation of utter chaos at this moment when we want to be going ahead and she wants to be going ahead.
So I believe that the word there. Can we play the beginning again? Yeah, I think it's.
We're talking about a very small rump group.
Yeah, it's a rump group. Now, you got to know. Do you know what a rump group is? It's a remnant of a larger political grouping. So they're already being dismissed. The Democrats are already dismissing their freshman incoming class of idealist candidates who were voted in on the basis of this idealism, and they're already being talked down. It's not really talking down the rump group. You're talking down the voters that put that rump group in. You guys, you Democrats, barely, you know, what are we, 10 days after you winning the election? And you're already messing this thing up. You're already misreading the mandate. The public does not want more of Nancy Pelosi. They just don't. Your own voters don't, many of them. This is going to be a fascinating thing to watch. And I think I really do think the how they play this may very well decide how long they hang on to the majority. If they put Nancy Pelosi in, it's going to be 2 years. I cannot see this being good. All right. We come back. We will not have a show next week. So I'm going to just talk briefly about Thanksgiving here and give you my thoughts for the holiday, because that's coming up next week. One of my favorite holidays of the year. Leave you with a few words and then get our weekend started. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, I just want to tell you this. You know, I didn't grow up with a very traditional Thanksgiving. The holiday that's coming up next week, but my parents adopted it from as long as I can remember. We did have a family meal, and it was never a big family meal because we always, you know, it was just us. We were in this bold new world, one lonely family unit, literally. None of our family lives inside, or extended family lives inside of the United States. We were it. It was my parents, me, and my sister. But my parents, as newcomers to the country, did a lot of things to integrate us. We continued speaking our language, Czech, at home. But, of course, learning English at school and speaking English well. But one of the crucial early on things that my parents says, we did Thanksgiving at home. And I'll tell you, it has become over time one of my absolute favorite holidays. There's no pressure for gifts. There's no pressure for anything other than getting together, cooking, and having a great time. And by the way, we've done away with the cooking component of it because we've traveled the last several Thanksgivings and fed ourselves in restaurants, which has been absolutely awesome. And I highly recommend it if maybe your thing isn't to spend, you know, a weekend in the kitchen. So I look back at Thanksgiving and I remember my parents embrace it because of their absolute gratitude for being in this country. My parents loved it, and they ingrained it in us from an early age. And I have to say, this Thanksgiving, because we've heard a lot this past year, past 2 years, about how awful this country is, about how this terrible direction that we're going in, how we've got people that, you know, we never disagreed on anything. If you listen to the press reports, right, we never disagreed on anything until 2016. And then America went nuts. And we've got these Trumpists over here and Democrats over there. And nobody's talking. Nobody's agreeing. And while some of that is true, we still have such a great country that we share that we need to keep in our thoughts this holiday and take some time away from politics. Look, if you've got that crazy uncle that's coming to dinner, don't talk about it. If you know they hate Trump, don't bring it up. Leave your Make America Great Again hats at home. Okay. This is not the time to unfurl any Trump banners. Go and enjoy your family. Focus on being together. Try to mend perhaps some broken relationships that have occurred in the past months And I think most importantly, remember that we have so much to be thankful for. We live in a country that people are literally dying trying to get in. And whatever comment you have about illegal immigration, your position on it and whatnot, think about it. People are dying to try to get here. And you and I, we live here. Many of us were lucky enough to have been born here. And so this holiday, let's remember that. We'll be thankful for your family, even if they are completely nuts politically. And be grateful for this great nation, because we are united together as one, and we have an absolute unique treasure here that is our own. And so with that, I wish you a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thank you for giving us the week off next week. We will all be, my family and I, we will be traveling as per usual and back safely in time for the week after. So the podcast will be back on track then. Tell a friend, download it on iTunes. You know where to find us. Sam Rejofsky, over and out.